friends, and welcome to a special edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren, and in just a moment I'm going to throw you over to a chat myself and Stuart Watson had with Ipswich Town MD Ian Milne and Club Secretary Stuart Hayton prior to Friday's game with West Brom. We crammed a lot into a busy hour of chat as we discussed the club's role in the community, Marcus Evans' involvement with the club, and Milne's background before joining Town. There are plenty of other interesting nuggets in there as well, including how one of our guests has an FA Cup winner's medal in his safe, who are the regular visitors to the Ipswich Town boardroom on match days, and whether or not fax machines are really used on transfer deadline day. All the important stuff discussed. So without further ado, I'll hand you over to myself in the Ipswich Town boardroom. Enjoy. Right, Stuart, we have taken the Kings of Anglia podcast out on the road. We're in a much more glamorous, fancy surrounding than our usual whitewashed office. Where are we right now?
This is the boardroom of Ipswich Town. And we are joined by a couple of guests today. We have Ian Milne, Managing Director, and Stuart Hayton, Club Secretary, joining us. So, very nice to have some new voices on with us.
Thanks for joining us, guys. This is a bit of a step up in grandeur for us.
Pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yes.
So what goes on in this room then? I bet they've seen some things. This room, we've got pictures on the wall of the great teams, the great Robson teams. Signed England shirts up on the wall. This room's seen some things, hasn't it, over the years?
Yes, it certainly has, and seen some very interesting people in here as well. So, the collectibles and scarves and goodness knows what here. This is where we've got the desk, which actually I don't use. I use the dining room table. It's got six chairs around it, and I use this. We get the senior execs in here and for interviews and for discussions, for meetings, for chats. Occasionally we have some social events in here, so there's the fridge with some booze in it. So
well, that's the traditions of Ipswich Football Club, right. The Kobolds
we have to keep it going, so we do our best. We'll try, don't we?
I think I remember it. It was where I came to be interviewed by your good self. A couple of years ago, before I came to work here, so I remember that, and that was an interesting day. And I obviously passed the test to be here.
Well, yes, it's interesting. We do interviews in here, and most are good ones, they come across very well. But it's great having the team around a table like this. It's an oval table, so it's good to have them all around.
Dining room table doesn't quite do this justice, Ian. I think it's sort of we've got wood panelled walls. This looks pretty sturdy, been here for some time.
That's right.
No. And is this television here? Is this where Marcus will be doing his video link ups with you?
No, we got a portable one, which is actually falling apart. But he does his VCs. But he loves VCs. From wherever he's in, whatever part of the world. So, my preference is always to get face to face and what have you. As we are today.
Mm.
But he does that. He has to do that for the work he does and for where he needs to be. So
the telly doesn't go on very much, does it? It's usually on a Saturday morning or stuff.
That's right. When we're sort of kind of Sky Sports and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
It's all hard at work here, Stuart.
Talking of hard at work for you, Stuart, the journey to get you guys on the podcast is I bumped into Stuart a couple of times and he said he listened to this. I don't think you've probably, I'm sure, Ian, you're far too busy and important to listen to the Kings of Anglia podcast.
I have, yes.
But paint us a picture of you listening to our dulcet tones, Stuart.
I tend to do it as I might as well go public with it. I tend to listen to the podcast when I'm ironing my shirts for work. So it's usually obviously we tend to work 6 days a week, so six shirts on a weekend, and do my ironing and listen to the podcast. And by the time it's finished, I've usually ironed all my shirts. So.
He multitasks.
No wonder he passed the interview.
Yeah, no, this is it. Yes.
I love hearing about where people listen to this. We've just had a guy who from Jacksonville in Florida has just come into the office and brought us a crate of crisps. because he's from. We did a podcast about crisps once.
Your best one, I think. To be fair.
I know a few people have said that.
That's slightly worrying that that's his finest work so far. But
I think one I missed. But we won't go into the crisps at this moment in time. I don't think.
No, we'll move on from crisps. Yeah. I think.
Well, we're here on the day of the West Brom game tonight. Yeah, right, what's the time now? It's 4:20. Mm. 3 hours or so from kickoff. It's a big night for Ipswich, this, isn't it? A big attendance expected.
It is, and I think it's maybe a bit general interest why all this happened and we did the discounted ticket. Firstly, it was supposed to be on a Saturday. As you know, Sky wanted it, and so it became Friday. Friday can be difficult games to hold because people go out Fridays and to try and get people to change their habits to come to football and then go on after the game, has that been a problem for us? I mean, the game we had against Middlesbrough a few seasons ago, that was we ended up with 13,200, and we thought, well, we really do need to do something, get more than that involved. And also, I think at the back of our minds also was, we haven't been successful on the field. We haven't been as entertained as we should be. And so we thought, well, maybe we can, and somebody said, well, it's Black Friday. We do a Black Friday offer. And so we, again, with all the boys and girls around the table coming up with ideas, and we came up with the idea of a £10 ticket. And we thought, great. And I decided, I'll go public with this, I decided to go ahead with it without discussing it with Marcus in the hope that, we would make enough money to break even on it based on, the full price match. Fortunately, it's happened. As we know, we're looking at sort of 22,000 tonight. But coincidentally, with Paul starting with us, and we had a staff firework party here, and he came along with his team, and I said, look, this is what we're doing. He said, fantastic. And, Paul's done a lot of, as we've said before, a lot of people, the fans have said, he's done a lot with the squad. He's done to get their confidence back and morale, and I won't go into because you've talked to him on that one, Stuart. And he said, I want to get the fans involved. That helps the team and make a noise, and really get... So he was very pleased about that. And we also talked about other ideas, these clapper balls, which I've got one here, but I won't sound it now. Don't break people's eardrums. And so it really sort of became a multi-reason why we did it. But it's been a great experiment, but it has ticked, and those are the reasons why we've done it. It is a special offer. It's something that we we wouldn't do regularly because we don't upset the other pricing. But it has ticked some boxes, and I think we'll see how the things go.
It's a balancing act, isn't it? Because you want to look after your loyal season ticket holders, the giving you your regular income in the summer. But yeah. I think those fans want to see it at a full stadium as well, and it helping the crowd. So you talked about that break even in terms of it's not as simple as saying half the prices and double your attendance, is it? And they're the figures that you guys are doing the time.
I think what will be good is we've seen, certainly in my time here, it's obviously the East Anglia Derby games have got the great atmosphere, but probably the best atmosphere of last season was the game against Leeds, where we had more Leeds fans, and suddenly that brought the best out of the Ipswich fans, and so we created that atmosphere. And I think we described it felt like a proper football game with an atmosphere that's not always the case when you've got 14,000 on and it's been flat. So hopefully tonight we'll see that again, where it's the North Stand's full and that starts the atmosphere off, and then everyone else will join in, and the clappers, as Ian has said, will add to it, and that'll be a great thing for all the young kids who are coming along, and also the sort of stay away fans perhaps, and they'll come back and hopefully put on a performance, they enjoy it, and they come back again on Wednesday and the other games before Christmas, because we have got the Sheffield United game the 3 days before Christmas is also a kid a quid game, so that's another time when again we hope that what's traditionally a time when it's a low attendance just before Christmas, people will come, and it's It's not going to cost them a fortune.
No, and I think take up your point about is, I think there's quite a few kids coming because it is a Friday night, so they've been allowed to stay up and all the rest of it. And you know, the cost is a good price for them. And I think, you know, the other point, you're quite right, there's lots of stories that people who haven't turned up because we haven't been playing entertaining football, you know, they've seen, they've heard what Paul has said, and you know, the matches which precede this one. And you know, feel that we'll give another chance, and here's an opportunity at almost an introductory price, if I can put it out there, to come back and see what we're about. I personally love the Saturday games, but I also the evening games. They have something different, don't
something
they?
Special about under
and
the lights.
So we're all together, you know, the dark sky out there and the lights, and we're all together.
Yeah.
And I think it's it becomes a very noisy but friendly, I think, occasion as well.
Well, this is going to be going out after the game, so fingers crossed.
Yeah.
When you're listening to this, you're also reflecting on a nice Ipswich win, but of course a game with Bristol City on Wednesday as well, under the lights again.
Yes,
to come thick and fast.
Right, they do. Yes, I mean he's got we've got three matches, and you know, they're all tough ones, but one match at a time. One match at a time.
Before we move on, you mentioned the Leeds game there, Stuart, and that atmosphere was great that day, as you rightly say.
Yeah.
Was part of that having the Leeds fans a little bit nearer to the North Stand? They had that whole end, and is that something the club would consider going further forwards, moving the away fans?
I think the issue we always have with this one is there's only certain clubs that will bring that many supporters to fill the Cobble Stand, and obviously we've got supporters already bought season tickets in the Cobble Stand, so if we do that, we have to move them. And there's so many games, probably 19 of the 23 that you play, that are against teams who don't bring enough. You know, will only bring 500 or 1,000 fans. So there's a lot of cost involved in moving fans if we were to move them to that end. I don't know. I think I'm not sure it makes that much difference, but other people have got different opinions in terms of if you put the away fans next to the North Stand, because again, you've then got to go through the safety advisory group and the police to make sure they're happy. And whilst it does create an atmosphere, I think we see every year when we play Norwich that fans suddenly move to the South Stand lower and South Stand upper to get near them. And there were occasions last season with them. Bottles and things being thrown, which is not the nice side of football. So probably easier said than done. And I think you were at the meeting a couple of weeks ago where that question was asked in front of us when we did the sort of supporters forum meeting. And it's an interesting one. I'm not sure we can fully get to that point.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that it's great when you do have a big away support here, because it does raise the game for our own fans as well. Indeed, when our fans go away, we're fantastic. I mean, I always praise them, so does Marcus. I think the travelling fans are fantastic people. But when we have Leeds, it also picks up, helps to pick up our crowd, and also picks up, the players as well. They really feel they've come into a sort of, a stadium, a battleground, if you will, where there's the roaring of the crowd and all the rest of it, sort of brings out some basic human instincts, I think, in many ways, in the nicest possible way, of course.
I think the answer is as well. You want to try and fill the stadium with Ipswich fans and have 2,000 away fans, and that be that, and that's what offers like tonight will hopefully bringing people back. And I think the club just needs, if you start winning games, people will be enthused and come back, and the crowds will go up. There is a latent support out there that I think will come when the good times return.
When, not if.
When, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, you don't ever want to be in football and not doing well, it's bad for us all if we're not, we don't enjoy being bottom of the league. The best thing in the world is when your team's winning and you come into work at a football club and you're top of the league or you're flying high. It's just everything is right. But when it's wrong on the field or you're not getting the results, then there's always other things that people will see. If you've lost 3-0, then the pies were cold and there was a big queue for the gents and everything else. But when you've won 3-0, no one there's still probably a queue for the gents, but no one's bothered because they're all...
And it's still £25 a ticket.
They're all jolly because we're 3-0 up or
yes,
whatever.
Yes. It is those sorts of issues that we have to be be concerned about. Is those. But it's nice to have a big away crowd here. We all agree with that. You know, Steve Pearce, who's our head of media, he's always banging the drum about getting more away fans here. But there's only about four or five clubs that will bring that sort of support. But I mean, you see it for yourselves. It is great when they do, and it sort of wakes us lot up as well.
Mm. Stuart, those listening will recognise that's probably not a Suffolk accent that is coming down the microphone.
I'm practising my Suffolk accent.
how are you getting on with that, boy?
I think my kids are getting it from school. Their accent's changing. They're losing their Wigan accents like I have. So I think I'm probably too old for mine to change, but it's my kids' accent's definitely changing, having lived down here for nearly 2 years now.
So what was your journey, for those listening that maybe don't know, what is your journey to Portman Road? A long time at Wigan.
I did, all my life at Wigan really, but working for Wigan from 96 to 2013. And the assistant manager here for West Brom tonight was Graeme Jones, who was Roberto Martinez's assistant all through. But Graeme was one of the sort of first people when I first got into football who I did a contract for and signed for Wigan. So there's an interesting story, and obviously we'll have a chat tonight. So yeah, that was Wigan. Then I moved to Liverpool, had 2 years at Liverpool, then on to Leeds and had just short of 2 years at Leeds, and then a brief spell with Cardiff, and then here. But here was very much influenced by the fact that my wife is from Manningtree, so she was keen to move back down here to be with her family. She got fed up of 15 years in the northwest, too much rain and cold for her, so she wanted to come down to the sun and dryness of East Anglia again.
You must have seen quite the transformation at Wigan in over those years.
From a small club with sort of 2,500 people watching to going up to getting 25,000 on for a few games in the Premier League. But again, that gives hope to Ipswich, really, in terms of, I know Ipswich have got a far bigger support and it will turn up. I think if you put this game on at Wigan, you wouldn't get the £10 offer, you still wouldn't get this, you know, up to 22,000, and that shows the support that there is in Suffolk and around, and Suffolk and Essex and around for this club. So it gives me hope, and it also just shows what you can do. And I had a great fun times there, but equally next month when they're here, I shall be definitely supporting Ipswich, because I think it's obviously it's your job, but you know all the players who play for Ipswich personally, whereas I've been that far away from what is still obviously my boyhood club that I don't really know anybody who plays for them, and there is that connection. You know, it's like if you're playing football yourself, if you change to a different team, you're playing for that team and wanting them to win.
I think we've been, Stuart on board, because he has been at a number of clubs, that helps us. You know, every club, I'm sure he would agree, has its own individual ways of doing it and own culture and what have you. But nonetheless, there are some common themes and common issues that they say, well, this is how we dealt with it there. And that's very, very useful to us. Mm. But, you know, clubs are very individual, and there's different ways of doing it, and we can try different ways. And it's part of a good, the great team I've got here is we even the Barmy's, I want to come with the Barmy's ideas, because some of those mature into a great idea. And very free flowing, and Stuart's part of that team.
It's good. I think it's good for 2022 that I've got the Champions League experience for when Town go back into Europe.
There you go. Excellent.
You've got an FA Cup winners' medal, haven't you?
I have. Yes, locked away in a safe somewhere, but yes, with Wigan. So that was. I think I've got quite a few medals from as a club secretary. You get a medal, so I've got a League Cup losers medal as well from 2005. We've got a few medals for promotion, so Steve Pearce doesn't like it because obviously he says you didn't play in any of those matches, but promotion, I didn't get one for promotion from the bottom division to the what is now like sort of League 2 to League 1, because I wasn't a secretary then, so I didn't get one. But then I've got all the divisions going through that from Wigan's promotions, and then I was, when I was at Liverpool, that was the the first season I was there was the sort of Luis Suarez scoring all the goals and Gerrard's slip season. So I thought we were nearly on for that would have been the full set, the Premier League medal, but we didn't get one, obviously, because of the slip against Chelsea. So it didn't quite happen.
We need to find out a bit more about your background, Ian, because I've spoken to you about it as well. But I don't think the listeners probably know where you were previously. You've been Diageo, Revlon.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I was. I'm a solicitor by profession. I started working with what you managed Truman Brewers, as it was then, which was part of the Grand Met Group. Went through into the drinks division and then eventually all became Diageo. But in those early days, it owned the hotels, the Intercontinental, it owned Burger King, it owned William Hill, and the whole shebang, Compass Catering at that time. So we saw a lot of businesses come and go. Also Haagen-Dazs was part of it, Pillsbury. But then they sort of slimmed it down back basically to the drink side, and then they merged with Guinness and became Diageo. And that was great, just like being in a business school, learning so much from other people and who've gone on to bigger and better things as well. And then I joined Revlon. I was there for a few years, very much an American company. And after Revlon, I joined Marcus as his general counsel, where I've been for the past 18, 19 years. And then 10, 11 years ago, he bought the club, became a non-exec director at that point, which is great because I love football. And then 6 years ago, became managing director. It was supposed to be only a 6 months, the managing director role. I probably said that. Why didn't you go away? I loved it. I just love the football and I love the community. The football family is great. Met some fantastic people, met some of my heroes as well. Very privileged to meet anybody who's involved with football. Mm. And it's great being around the town, bumping into, you know, dads and their kids, and they say, "Oh, hello, Ian, how's it going?" And all the rest of it, have a little chat, and I've never seen them before, but you know, we have a little chat about it, and I love that part of it, I think we have to be approachable. I know Stuart's very approachable to fans and people who are interested in football, we must do it. We must absolutely do it, and you guys are part of football as well. You know what's going on, understand the issues. But at the end of the day, we've got to provide entertainment. Some people say, well, you know, entertainment and football, no, it is an entertainment business and we've got to entertain. We've got to give entertaining, winning football. And that's what we're striving for. My job is more, make sure we try and entertain off the field. And the things like the fan zone, which we introduced, which has been, which worked really well, and we're still trying to make further enhancements on that. But at the end of the day, it's really what, on the field. And you learn a lot from the managers you've met and the other managers we get in the boardroom. I'm sorry to see Martin O'Neill leave Ireland, and hopefully we will see him down here at some point for matches. But I actually love the job. I'm very lucky.
So if you'd have told your 13-year-old self, that you would be here now, managing director of a football club.
No, absolutely not. My stepfather was very much involved with football and cricket. A lot of football friends, and one was John Mortimer. I used to play with for Chelsea in the 60s. We used to travel up I used to go to school at Wharton on Thames, and he used to go up to Chelsea, the train, got on the train. So I'm sorry, a bit of a Chelsea fan in me, which luckily doesn't clash at the moment. I'm very much a Blues fan
You watch Chelsea from the terraces?
Yeah, I've done all that, and standing up and all the rest of it. Remember even seeing George Best play. And people like that, but you know, I've been very fortunate in meeting some heroes like Alex Ferguson and Bobby Charlton and what have you. And you pinch yourself, and you luckily you do that. And what I try and do is to the fans and people around to try and get them to enjoy the company of some of these people, you know, so far as one's able to do it. I think it's very important that we as a club also get, you know, the managers out and the players out. Luckily, we do have a very good, you know, team that will get out to the fans, and they appreciate that. And a lot of them made their homes here as well. You know, people like Chambo and Scusi and whoever. And they're always happy to, you know, to give up their time, and they love doing it.
Did you play, either of you, when you were young?
Oh, I used to play, yeah. Yeah, I used to play in goal. I mean, he still plays.
Well, I'm sure, when we were younger.
he still plays.
Park, wasn't it? I was told. He was up there.
Last week. A conference we're playing, but I think we've got a staff game down here on the Tuesday nights. We play five-a-side on the practice pitch out there. So
I'm told that these conferences at St George's Park are all a bit of a ruse, just so you can go out and have a game of football at the end of it.
That's it. Well, you get to use the great FA facilities and wear the England kit. So we managed to win last week against the team. Graham Lasseau was in the opposition side because he was hosting the conference. But in terms of
he told me he was working. Yeah. He was playing football.
This was 6 till 7 It was out of working hours.
Yeah.
Dropped you in it there, haven't I?
Yeah.
But in terms of your question, did I play? I only played, you know, rubbish level, no level of, you know, not Sunday League football.
But defender, midfielder,
defender,
yeah, Ian.
Enjoyed it.
Goalkeeper.
Yeah. But also I played defender as well. Bit of centre field as well.
Me and the Cat Mill,
yes. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I was pleased to cricket. Played for Surrey Colts as well, so I enjoy the sport.
If anything happens to Bart or Gerks, we know where to turn.
But I think what is important, and Stuart, well, I know, will agree with me on this, if you're going to do a job like this, you've got to love football. Yeah. If you don't touch this sort of job, if you don't love the sport, it's quite different from any other job, you know, in commerce or what have you. Where you can enjoy the product or what have you, particularly Diageo enjoyed the product.
What about Revlon?
Revlon, well, no. I decided to work for a company that my wife would enjoy. But this is particularly a job that, you know, you must love football if you don't. And, you know,
I'm sure it's unlike any other business in that you can do everything you want during the week, but it all comes down to 90 minutes. Yeah. I mean, how do you watch the game thinking, you know, if it's a bad result, are you thinking Monday morning's going to be tough? You know, all those plans that we've got in place for X, Y, and Z
There is that. It's a case of, we sit there as fans, think, oh my God, you know, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. But other times we're the ones who are leaping up in the air and being with the fans.
I think you have to keep level-headed, and because you know that it is like that, and whatever happens, you're coming into work on Monday morning. Yes, it's better if you've won the game, or you've had a good result if it's a draw away from home, and yeah, you're down if you've lost. But I don't think you can. I think you hear managers say that as a bit of a cliche. You have to just stay sort of level-headed enjoy it on a Saturday, and then whatever happens on a Saturday, you've still got to be in work on a Monday doing your job, whether the team's won or lost. So it's just makes life easier if your team's winning, as I said earlier.
You you get emotional at the game, but you have to learn to temper that in order to keep, you know, make sure you're doing the business side of it as well. In the same way, we're very lucky to meet some very brave people, some very ill people, you've got to be even emotioned with those people as well, but make sure they enjoy it. You know, some of them, it may be their last game of football that they're seeing, and they, you know, they're very, but sometimes those things do get you, but that, you know, that's all part of the job.
I think that's where the club is, you know, getting the stuff in the community, and all football clubs have got to be like that, that they are a big part of the community, and people see them as such. You know, tonight we've got a lot of stuff going on for the Samaritans. There's a collection outside. The Samaritans are the community champions, so there's the team are warming up with the Samaritans on the kit as they warm up, all the other stuff that the club does in the community with, you know, particularly this year, it's all the mental health stuff with, you know, the Football League being sponsored. And I think that's the other side of football, that you have to be part of the community and be relevant to the fan base, and it is, as Ian's just said, great when you can help out people who are, you know, are in difficulties, whether it be illness or whatever, that they can come to football and forget about it for 90 minutes, or you can give them experiences like taking them in the dressing room to meet the players, particularly the kids who get so much out of that. And I think we take a lot of it for granted that, you know, we can go down the dressing room and see all the players, but to other people, just to get some contact, you see every match outside the window where the kids are lining up to get the players' autographs and the selfies after the game. So I think that's just a small thing that you offer back to the community, but it's just a massive thing that the club is part of Suffolk.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the challenges, and you guys are part of this as well. It's one of the challenges is, you know, there's these mental health issues, and they're concerned about mental health amongst the young people, and them not being isolated, and that's one of the big issues. And yeah, you know, we're very keen to play our part in getting those young people here. It's a group of people, they can enjoy it and get in the fresh air, they can support something, and then they may actually go and play a sport. So, you know, the idea of joining a club and being playing sport and all the rest of it, you know, I think we all have a duty to try and get those kids to do that, because I think we're all worried about mental health issues, the obesity issues and all the rest of it. And that's a responsibility that, you know, we all take very seriously. And you know, we want, you know, it's not just commercially we want them here. We want them here because there's a need for them to be here, and they can learn to socialise in that way and enjoy themselves.
What does a club secretary do, Stuart? What, how varied is your?
Oh yeah, what does
your
club secretary do?
Well, today, I mean, it just, anything can happen, and each day is different. I mean, the biggest thing to say, though, the most easiest thing to say is whenever a player is joining the club, everyone needs a contract, and you've got to get them in from another club and give them an employment contract. So that's the bit that you do in the transfer windows that takes a lot of time, and is probably you need to know what you're doing in that area, and hence I've had however many years doing it, so you've got all the skills. But not that you know, I was at a conference yesterday, we're now getting a new online system for registering players, which means you're still hearing football people talking about faxing over things.
I want to know this.
No one does.
It's not.
We don't have a fax.
Oh, you've ruined it.
Probably, however long, 10, 15 years ago, it was changed. You know, everything was emailed, and now we're getting to the point where, coming shortly, we'll be uploading documents. We do, if you get a foreign player, documents are uploaded onto this FIFA system. But now we've got a domestic system coming up. So that's probably the I suppose the sexy side of the job that everyone's interested in. But other things, I mean, you're doing all preparations for the match days. You've got a bit on the safety side, attending meetings about the match days, the ticketing. You just get involved. I think probably you're a jack of all trades and probably master of none, really, because you've got to have a different hat and get involved with all areas of the club. But you're dealing with, probably, you know, I can have a conversation with Steve Pearce about media. He knows far more about it than me, but have an input. Have a conversation with Ian about legal matters and put a point forward, but Ian's the expert on it. So I think most of the club secretaries tend to be sort of general people with business qualifications, but we're not many of us are accountants or lawyers. We're all just general people, and then probably the best thing I would say is you have to be able to chat to everybody and have a relationship with people in all departments.
I think Stuart does himself down because he does need to know the regulations, procedures of you know, the Football League, the FA, FIFA, and goodness knows what. And you know, that gets more and more complicated. It also branches out to, you know, there are, you know, certain duties within the academy and what have you, safeguarding and all, all that's coming very much our way. So you know, he has to be very, very abreast of those sorts of things. And you know, he's a very important sort of regulatory part of the job, which keeps us in the straight and narrow, myself and, you know, everybody here, including Marcus. So Marcus will ring him up and test him on, you know, can I do this, can I do
you
that?
And he says no to us through sort of section C, whatever, and all that.
Well,
sort
you
of
just
stuff.
Tend you pick it up over the years, and then it does change. But you tend to just sort of know what the answer is most of the time. But then you do have to check it to make sure you're still right and things haven't changed.
Things like suspensions and things like that. You've got to stay on top of. You
Luke
know,
Chambers
sure.
is on 4 yellow cards if he gets a card tonight. He misses Bristol City. Things like that. You need to be able to know because you've got to tell the manager if he doesn't know.
So that's your duty, is it? To feed that.
Keep an eye on all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So.
Fielding an ineligible player in the cup, stuff like that,
and indeed in all the games, you know, the rules that changed this year that we always have to have a member of our a player who's come through the academy always in the 18 this year. So you've always got to have a Flynn Downs or an Andre Dizel in the 18, and so that's another thing, because it is possible that we could have an 18 with no academy players in. So you've got to make sure that that's right on a match day, and you haven't breached any rules with that one. So I've been doing it for 20 odd years, so you just get used to it, and you know that it is pretty much 24/7 that people will ring you up with problems and issues, and you try and deal with them. But most of the time you've got good people around as well, and you know to contact them to make things happen, you know, things, coaches breaking down or just the random things that can happen. And I think that's always the easiest matches here are when nothing happens, as in there's nothing going wrong, because that's when you can sit back and just watch the game. But very rarely does that happen. Something will happen and this is, you know, something's not working, or someone's not got a ticket, or they can't get in, and that's when you've got to sort of solve the problem and fix it and make sure for all the fans that everything's going right.
With the academy player in the 18 thing, has there been a time you've had to pull a manager up on that? Or
are they
pretty hot on it themselves?
I tell them all the rules. Obviously, it only came in this year for this season, so I went through it with Paul Hurst and his team at the start of the season, and then similarly again under the new regime. So
no near misses, yeah.
No, and I think what Will Stevenson, who's the analyst, and he's you know, the man who does all the looking at things on video and you know,
analysis
how teams. Will is the man who actually fills in the team sheet on a match day. So he writes down, you know, he's obviously given the team by the manager, and he physically has to write down. You know.
This is the peek behind the curtain stuff that we like.
Yeah.
I think fans like to know.
Yeah.
You know, they see the team sheet comes out these days on social media about an hour before, but it's Will goes down to the dressing room. He has to physically write it down, and then that gets taken back up here to yourself.
No, it goes into the referee, and then we just get a copy later. So it's very unusual that you would know the team before that. I don't think most managers will, the coaching staff and the inner sanctum will know the team. We don't know the team in advance, so we can't tell you what's happening tonight. Will will fill the team in, and then I actually don't know who went in on the first match here to tell you, but either the manager or the assistant manager tends to go in and see the referee with the captain and the other side, and you hand your team sheet in, and then it goes out to the media. The media get it, you probably know, an hour and 15 minutes before the game, and then it goes out an hour. The team goes out an hour before kickoff.
The club media get it that little bit before us. We see it the same time as the punters do, don't we?
Refreshing that Twitter feed until it comes out.
It must just be Sky who get it early then, not you written guys.
Yeah, so they're putting a bit more money into the pot than we are.
I'm going to check that tonight. I don't know whether Paul Lambert went in or whether Stuart Taylor did, as to go in and see the referee, but that's what happens.
What time's that all happening then?
It's an hour and 15 before kickoff, so it'll be 6:30 tonight. So I think that's always the interesting side of football that punters don't see, is how many people behind the scenes know each other from other clubs, and it is a bit of a loving, if you like, that you've seen your mates who you've played with 10 years ago, and you know, like I've said, I'll see the West Brom assistant tonight. There's also another lad in the West Brom team, the centre back. I'm trying to think of his name. Played for Leeds, Kyle Bartley. Mm-hmm. So I signed him on loan when I worked for Leeds. So you just see people, and but more so on the players' side, that they're all, you know, before they go out and do battle, they're all mates behind, yeah, behind the scenes. How's your kids going on? What's happening with your missus and all that? And it's that side that probably, particularly if it's against Norwich and your players are talking to each other, mm-hmm, probably the bit that the crowd don't really want to see, but people do have friends who play for the opposite side.
You mentioned Martin O'Neill earlier, Ian, who's been a regular here, keeping an eye on players and socialising with you guys in the director's room beforehand. Mm. Who else have become sort of people that you've got to know quite well within the game, people that our listeners would know?
Who else would we know? Come on, help me, I've got to think now.
What about other chief execs and MDs?
Oh yeah, who, I mean, yes, I mean, take one, but just that reminds me, just take one point that Stuart mentioned, is quite an interesting industry, because apart from on the field, it's non-competitive, mm, because the clubs are different. So we do share a lot of ideas with them, because they're in another area, we're not competing with them. And so that's quite unique and as well. But yeah, and I'm very going with people, you do meet some very interesting and some very interesting owners, you know, multi-billionaires like Steve Lansdowne at Bristol City, who Hargreaves Lansdowne. Mel Morris up at Derby, very much involved with Candy Crush. Andrea, trying to pronounce this, Razziani, who is the Leeds owner with and heads up 11. And there's there's a lot of very interesting guys out there, but what it is, football is a great leveller. You know, you have these guys, very powerful guys, very rich guys, and all the rest of it. But when it comes to the ballroom or on the terraces, where have you, or in meetings, you're all, you know, it's all football, and it does honestly just bring everything down to one level. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be, you know, sweeping the streets or being in charge of a big multinational. It just levels things up. Truly, it does, and it's great. It does do that, as you've seen. But yeah, you do occasionally meet a few people like Ari and
he's in the jungle at the moment.
He's in the jungle at the moment. Yes, he's right. And all the managers, you know, Ian Holloway, and who is a great interesting guy to meet.
I think it's all the old footballers as well who come in. Obviously, the Ipswich ones who we see regularly, but you've got other clubs who, you know. Forest and Villa always seem to bring, you know, old players from a bit like we are here, that it's the players from that sort of, I think when I was a young kid first getting into football, and you know, I think what's the guy called, the Dutchman who scored, the Johnny Method, came last year with Nottingham Forest, and you remember his great free kick that he scored at the Trent end with, I always remember Tony Gubber, didn't the Dutchman drive it well, and he does this great celebration wagging his finger, and you know, and I didn't really know it was him, and he was sat next to us in the boardroom, and he's, you know, introduced who he was, and you think, oh yeah, I remember you. So I really like meeting, you know, old people like that. When I'm Peter Lorimer, when I was working at Leeds and things.
Oh yeah, Peter in here.
Yeah, he's
we chatted, he was doing some videos here. Yeah. I met Arsene Wenger and oh gracious!
And I think when you go up to the next level in the Premier League, it attracts more film stars and sports stars, and particularly when you're in London, Arsenal and Chelsea, and they roll out the superstars turn up, and you're just having a look who's around.
You have Ed Sheeran down here. He's been at East.
Ed Sheeran,
we had a nice chat with him, and. When he came down, hopefully he'll come and see us again. Rick Wakeman.
Gary Barlow. Barlow. What's his name from One Direction? The lead singer of One Direction. Come on, Harry Styles.
Harry.
Yes.
So that's the great thing, that they're all football fans, really. So you can just talk football and music and everything. So
they don't want to talk about their particular training. Oh, they want to talk about football, which is great.
Your mate from Blur as well comes.
Dave Rowntree. We get him in. But no, do get a whole collection of people want to come. Judges, local judges we get in, and QCs. We've got Nick Randall, who's now chairman at Notts Forest, and he's a very well-known QC in the sports field as well. So you're lucky to meet those from a league point of view. It's nice to meet those guys. Mm-hmm. The guys from West Ham, Gold, and others like that. So very interesting. Yeah.
And does Marcus now have a sort of a select band of people that have grown over his time in football ownership that are his sort of trusted advisors now when he comes to selecting managers?
Managers and players, he will do the ringing around. But, I mean, with players, he would expect the manager to make sure that who is chosen is going to fit in. I mean, you know, Mick McCarthy was very, very strong on this, and so is Paul Lambert. You've heard him talk very similar. They've got to fit in. Mm. You know, can't be anybody. You know, there's some players, you know, that just were great, but they just won't fit in with the team. They could destroy the team spirit. Mm. And that's their job, to make sure that it does fit. There are certain things that you can't change, and one is a team spirit, and you've got, you know, you need the best team spirit to play.
How often do you speak to Marcus, Ian? Is it, how often are you?
Oh,
well, daily?
We talk on a or email on a daily basis, what's going on and all the rest of it. Apart from when I told him about the £10 ticket, he'd probably tell me off tonight or on Wednesday when I'm going to see him. But we have regular contact, and he's always, you know, interested in what's going on, and he's always available. I'm not going to waste his time either, because he's very busy administering a big empire.
Yeah, and what's he like? Tell fans what he's like, because we fans haven't got to know a huge amount about Marcus. He's done his video interview.
Yeah, he's done that
so finally people know what he looks
Marcus
like.
Marcus is a very family man, very approachable, very directed in how he manages the business, but he's a person you can challenge. As long as you're on safe ground, the challenge you're going to make to him. But no, he will challenge. You can disagree with him. And he would talk it through and all the rest of it. Won't be banging the table saying you've got to do as you're told. He will understand and talk things through. And, you know, yeah, occasionally he'll say, no, you know, you're right. You're right to do this way and what have you. Having worked for him for, you know, this period of time, I think I know where he is. I did ask him once, you know, about predictability, and he said, the most predictable thing about me is my unpredictability. So I thought that's quite a good one. But we also say about managing, and, you know, some people say, look, you know, have a light grip on the throat approach with managers. And he said, no, mine's a much more hard, you know, stronger grip on the throat to have. I've never got those sorts of things. But he's great with people, he, you know, when he goes around the businesses, and you know, some ways it'd be nice to see more of him out in the public, because they would eat out of his hands, you know, because he's very, very, he's very good at his job. He's a very good salesman.
Do you think that might happen?
We try and convince him to do more. We try and convince him to do more, because he's a great advert for himself, I think, and also for the club. He does dearly love the club, there's no doubt about it. Takes great interest. He's been spending recently a lot of time with Paul and the team down there. And he's very pleased what Paul's doing and the academy's doing. So, and he's very tough. You know, if he feels that, you know, another club or what have you is doing him over, he'll be very strong with it, won't he?
I find him a very likeable chap, considering he's the boss and the owner. And I think that the most impressive thing I see about him is he's just sharp as a tack for, you know, remembering things and just seeing how someone operates that then doesn't surprise you that he's as wealthy as he is, because you can just see how he's smart. I think that's probably the best way of saying it, and that's certainly what I found in my initial dealings with him. Was just impressed with how much he knew about football and how he would remember something and remember figures, and, you know, he'd be able to say if you look back at such a deal that we did in 2015, which is before my time, and I think we had this clause in, and he you know, okay, and then you find that, and you find out he was right, and that's just impressive that, you know, someone's got that, I suppose, brain power, and, yeah, no, and
you're
right. You know, so
damn
that,
it, he's got a fantastic memory. It's too fantastic sometimes, to all our detriment. But no, he's very approachable. Yeah, you have to prepare for him. You know, we won't suffer fools gladly, But and he's a family man as well, and his daughter
have fallen in love with the football.
His daughter, particularly Delphi, he loves the football, and she's very helpful on occasion on choosing the players. Helps us all, you know. Yeah. But she does. The family does love the football, and he continues to do so.
He was up here. Was he up here on Monday? I think Paul was saying they met.
Rumour was he was. Yeah. Yes, he was. Yes, no. Well, Paul said he was up here, and. They had a very good discussion and what have you. I'm sure Paul bent his ears on what he wanted to spend money on and all the rest of it, so quite right.
And as we're not going out live, he's here tonight as well.
I know, this is it, yeah. Yes, this is it, absolutely.
He's still getting, when he's not here, he's getting games piped into his office and he
won't miss a kick.
I was told he watched via Link Up one of the pre-season friendlies at, where was it, somewhere? It was Barnet.
Yeah, I think we managed to do
something. That's the level of interest he's got, he's watching a pre-season friendly at Barnet.
He's got access to Y Scout and all the rest of it, so you see other players that's coming in and all the rest of it. So it takes a great interest, and scouting it takes a big interest. He's directing that sort of way. He has a regular discussion with Dave Bauman, the director of football, who's very knowledgeable in that area. So yeah, he's really into it, and they. Paul and his team have to be on their mettle with him as well.
That's another secret for you, that owners can watch a live feed of games even on a Saturday afternoon. If he's not at the game, he's still able to watch it.
Because you can watch him abroad, can't you?
Even in this special rules for owners, you see.
He's just got his own. This isn't iFollow. This isn't it. This is his own special live feed.
The
AFL do it. People will be screaming at us to really ask you some stuff about relegation and all the rest of it. I actually think we can leave those discussions for another day, actually, given the situation we're at. So maybe we'll talk about the ramifications of the bigger picture and stuff.
Well, all we're going to say
further,
Stuart,
down the line,
we all think we'll stay up.
Yeah.
You've got to think like that until it's mathematically impossible. You can't ever say think that you're going to go down. So you know, there's so many points to play for. You've got to be positive, and if we as the club were giving out a negative message, then it's just completely wrong, wouldn't it?
Of course. And we're not stupid. We know we're in a difficult position, and you know we're very open with that. And you know, Paul has, you know, other than he's going to try very hard, and his whole team, you know, this club cannot get relegated. And so it is all positive, you know, he knows that, and he's not going to promise anything, but other than to work very hard. And you know, that's where it is, you know. We've got to be realistic about it. But no, at the moment, you know, he's done a lot for the squad, and I think that's got generally known by fans, both, you know, on the field and also off the field with fans. And he's been a joy to work with on that, and he's really raised the morale of the staff, not only at the training ground, but as I say, also very much here. And you get around, he was around here last night talking with staff and all the rest of it. And he likes to laugh and a joke, he doesn't mind his leg pulled and all the rest of it. So he's good.
Good.
So I come from a background of having twice survived on the last day of the season in the Premier League with Wigan, and game 37 as it is in the Premier League with 2-0 down at half time to West Ham and won 3-2 in the second half with the 95th minute goal to stay up, and so you've always got to believe in football, and because you know you've got lads who are going out there on the field, and you've got to give them belief that anything can happen. So
he had a belief because he bought his boots both those games.
Might get a game. Both times staying up on the last game of the season, and some of the best matches that I've enjoyed, because you know so much is at stake, and your lads go out there and deliver. So even if it gets to that stage that we've got to win against Leeds on the final day, why not? You know, we beat them here last year, so you know, I'm not saying we'll settle for that now, but you've always got to keep belief that you know you don't want to get relegated or even entertain the thought of it.
Love that positivity.
Yeah. Yes.
Should we do some quick fire? Yeah. We had a few little sort of topical things that we just do very quickly at the end. Some quick fire things. Where Ipswich Town stand on stuff, yeah. Andy?
Can we start with Chinwe Dadasian and the work permit issues there? Is that something that you guys deal with?
I don't think there's anything to that changes on that. We're still waiting for his permanent leave to remain is the name of the document that comes through from the Home Office. Nothing really we can do other than keep chasing them. when that comes through, then it means that he can sign for us on a permanent deal, and that really hasn't changed from the day he signed. And it's obviously people keep asking the question because he remains on loan, and that'll be the case until the document comes through.
Is there a commitment there for that to be a permanent transfer?
Whenever the confirmation's read from the Home Office as we stand, it's going to come through. I think it's the old word bureaucracy's got stuck in. Yeah. But no reason to believe that it's not going to come through.
Just a few people have said, you know, there's a new manager now, and if he didn't fancy Genoa, and that's a big if, would there be an option for it not to become a permanent? But is that all in place?
It's all in place, so it's got to happen.
Yeah.
No.
Fine.
Yeah.
The EFL TV rights was another one that's been rumbling on this week.
yes.
I think it was Aston Villa, was it Leeds, Nottingham Forest, particularly leading something.
Yeah, it's still very much a live issue.
Mm.
And there's further meetings going to happen with the championship clubs, and we're one of them. You know, there are some concerns out there which have been well publicised. You know, the group that we're involved with is very much a situation that, you know, it's not a case. It's really a case of, you know, how is this the best value deal, and was all, you know, the necessary research done on it. And there is a concern on that. There has been a concern with regard to, you know, what the EFL had agreed with Sky and what have you. There is concern about the Sky red button and how that can affect crowds. Mm. And so, yes, there's still very much issues. So it is going to continue as part of an issue of discussion.
I think there was some people talking about a breakaway from the championship. That seems extreme.
Yeah, no, but they don't want to do that. And also, this is not a greed thing with the championship, because it's very much aware that, you know, League One and League Two, we're not going to don't want to do them down at all, and that's absolutely genuine across the piece. But it is, you know, just a case of what you've heard. It's absolutely right. The statements you've heard is, you know, are we? You know, there is a big financial gap between the Premier League and the Championship. And you know the facts and figures of how popular the championship is, and you can't expect, you know, billionaires like Marcus and Mel Morris and what have you, to keep, you know, they can afford it, they can keep affording their 10, 12, 15 million, but, you know, it does get to a point year in, year out, that we're the only league that has that sort of money that's being pushed in from, you know, from private owners. There's not even a chance to break even or what have you, and you know, how much can you expect the people to do that? It's as simple as that. So it's quite right for them to test. See, hold on, are there media partners that you know, could do a better deal? And can it be mixed another way?
Have you found that the red buttons kind of affect? I don't know if you've.
It's too early to say. The bigger clubs have, yes. The one with the big crowds, they do feel very genuine. That's, I think. Well, of course, you know, you're going to have eight games a week, midweek ones, going live. You know, you can understand the situation. They're not, you know, Sky's viewers not paying any more, haven't to pay any more for it. You know, guy goes out, you know, it's raining, it's pouring down with rain, and I want to go to the match, and the wife says, oh no, stay at home, we have a glass of wine and eat at home, and you can watch it on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one.
Safe
standing? Are you still trying to?
It's very costly to do. I know we were talking to Steve Stone at Norwich before I mentioned that name. but it's just interesting. They were very much looking at doing one of the stands, and it was going to cost about $400,000, I think.
Okay.
A lot of money to put it back or to do that. So there is a big cost in doing it.
But in principle, it's something.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I remember standing on the terraces myself as a kid, and I loved it.
So Rosebery have done it, haven't they? They have a section of one of their stands as and Celtic as well. Obviously, a different story in Scotland, but it's been quite successful there.
Yeah.
And the last one was again to do with the terraces, but sort of drinking in your seat while watching the game. That's a another one that's been...
Yes.
I think we got linked with that, didn't we, on some website?
We don't know where that came from, actually. I think, in Germany they allow drinking on the terraces and what have you.
But it needs a change in the law of the land first. My thoughts on it, you could probably do it at certain games. You probably wouldn't do it at the East Anglia Derby game, but you could probably do it at, you know, Wednesday night's game against Bristol City. You'd probably do it tonight and then it wouldn't cause an issue, but I think that'll have to go through the Parliament, and I think they've got bigger things to worry about at the minute than
But contrary to some reports, then you're not driving an agenda to have fans drinking in their seats prior to games.
Not at all.
We should probably let you guys get on, shouldn't we? I think you've got a busy evening.
Yeah. Well, you're done.
I was going to ask you about the dartboard that I can spy over. Oh, the dartboard!
We have darts evenings, and I managed to win one game, and they got it signed by various professionals. So I thought, well, I can't leave it just in a box. I've got to put it up. I was at the evening,
and I have to say, it was who could score the most with three darts, wasn't it?
Ian just went up and got a few trebles.
Your signatures are on there, darts players.
But it's great fun evening, that is.
I had visions of you guys playing darts before games and stuff. That's not happening. Oh, that's a shame. I'm going to challenge you to a game.
Plenty of ball busy in this office, isn't there?
That's right. That's good.
We shall let you get on with your match day duties. Thank you very much for your generous time, both of you.
Enjoyed it.
Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
We can.
Be good.
Absolutely.
Fingers crossed tonight and Wednesday, hey?
Yes. Here we go.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.